Hey there! Are you a crime scene investigator, law enforcement officer, or forensic scientist looking for a Facebook community that understands you? Check out Taction USA's Forensic Product Groups. You'll find blogs, articles, information, and community. For those of us in the investigative field, there are not many lines of support out there, but Taction USA is a company that was founded by law enforcement for law enforcement. Subscribe today to get access to exclusive content. Just look for Taction USA in Facebook groups. Welcome to Crossing the Tape, your favorite true crime podcast. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Hillary, and I am joined by my lovely husband,
Brendan.
Please sign the crime scene log and join us for the second part of pretty much a people heist.
Yeah, we joked that it's kind of a people heist. We love a good heist, but this one wasn't for jewels.
No, but it's still interesting.
Yes. So in episode one, we told you about the 1800s. The British were keeping their convicts in Australia, different prison colonies. Forced labor was the name of the game, kind of building up Australia as their own territory, using those people. Well, most of the political prisoners there were Irishmen who longed for independence from British rule. And there's a group of six guys who were former military that the British decided they're going to have to just stay forever, even though many of the others were pardoned, because those guys are just too dangerous.
Yeah, they figured because of their military background, they were more of a threat.
Yes, that they're not going to stop once they're pardoned. So they were able to smuggle a letter out of the prison to the United States, where a fellow named James Devoy decided to help him out, got a captain for a ship, a couple of co-conspirators, and they sent this ship, the Catalpa, on a 5-month legitimate whaling voyage.
I really like that. That they just went about business.
Yeah, just everybody be
legitimately
cool. Let's just do a bit of whaling so nobody thinks we're up to anything.
Hey, maybe they wanted an extra money.
Yeah, probably. They probably pocketed all the oil money.
Right.
I didn't find anything about an accounting for the sales of the whale oil.
I know.
But they sold a bunch of that in Portugal, and then the ship captained by Captain Anthony headed for Australia. So they're now on their way in 1875, I believe we are.
Yes.
To Australia to actually bust these Irish fellas out. So now, what we didn't tell you last time is that James Devoy not only enlisted Captain Anthony and the Catalpa crew, again, most of whom were still oblivious to the true nature of their journey. They were just on for a whaling expedition.
What a rude awakening.
Yeah.
What?
Because if they all get caught, everyone's going to prison. I know. Even these guys who are just whaling by trade. Devoy also sent two other Fenian men, which the Fenians are the Irish independence-supporting folks that are imprisoned. Two other Fenian men ahead of the ship to establish themselves there and become his men on the inside. So they've got the escape plan, but they've also got a couple of fellas that are, you know, running ground operations, keeping eyes on things. Those two men were John Breslin and Thomas Desmond, and they both took the role of secret agent very seriously. They arrived in Australia in November of 1875, months ahead of the Catalpa, and Desmond went underground while Breslin opted for a high society role. Desmond took a job fixing carriage wheels and befriended local free Irishmen, guys who had already been pardoned and never left, and garnered sympathy for the convicted six. By the time the Catalpa arrived, Desmond had built his own private army of 5 men ready to stick it to the Brits. And John Breslin, on the other hand, took on the persona of James Collins, an ultra-cool, wealthy American businessman. And the local people were so taken with the charming Breslin, he had no trouble navigating the appropriate social circles until he befriended Sir William Cleaver Robinson, the governor of Western Australia. So he's made it all the way to the top of the social heap.
Right.
Because he's just so cool. The governor so wanted to impress his new rich American friend, he scheduled a private tour of the convict establishment to show Breslin his pride and joy. And Breslin obviously used that opportunity to pass the message on to the six prisoners that their rescue was imminent, and scoped out the facility. Now, this is still many months ahead of the actual breakout, but they at least have some comfort knowing, okay, some cool American dude just showed up and told us we're working on it.
Yeah.
So we're going to be okay. They were able to hold on a little longer. Breslin also spent his leisure time staying at the wonderful Emerald Isle Hotel, where he, of course, had a steamy affair with a young chambermaid. Breslin was even able to convince her to smuggle messages to the Fenians inside so they would know what to do, when to do it, and where to go when the time came. But he's just too cool. Who could resist? Now, while Breslin and Desmond burned the candle at both ends, they ran into a few stumbling blocks. See, the Irish Republic Brotherhood, another group with the same goal in mind, was already working in Australia hatching their own plan to free their Fenian brothers. Additionally, a local man, who was also a Fenian, was scheming as well. Now, luckily, Breslin, cool as ever, was able to smooth everything over and create one unified effort rather than three overlapping attempts. Every team needs... He's like the Clooney of the thing. He's just... Yeah.
He's the Clooney of the... Yeah, this heist.
He's debonair. He's suave. He can talk his way in or out of anything. Now, once the Catalpa arrived in late March of 1876, Breslin and Desmond had the plan wrapped up tight. They met with Captain Anthony and explained that he needed to commandeer a rowboat to take him and a portion of his crew to Rockingham Pier on the morning of April 15th. The pier was 20 miles from the prison, and the convicts were all set to be assigned to various work details outside the prison walls at that time. Their job would be to slip away from their assignment unnoticed and head to a meeting point, where clothes, horses, and weapons, just in case, would be waiting for them. They would disguise and arm themselves and ride the 20 miles to the pier, board the captain's rowboat, return to the Catalpa, which would be anchored in international waters, very important,
right,
more than 10 miles offshore. Once on board and out of British jurisdiction, they would be home free. Now, the escape plan would be briefly postponed, however, because the HMS Conflict, great name, a British gunboat had arrived in Fremantle, and if the authorities caught wind of the escape, the Conflict would sink the Catalpa in no time. Hmm. The good news about waiting for the Conflict to return to its homeland was that it meant the next best day for the escape would be on the day of the Perth Yacht Club Regatta.
Oh.
Yes. Lots of upward-pointing noses there.
Better not rain.
The regatta was a major event for Western Australia, and anybody who wasn't a square was going to be there, including most of the prison guards and local police, as well as the fantastically named Water Police. They weren't a division of the police department. These were the Water Police.
Hmm.
They were their own thing.
That's interesting.
You have to have a separate agency. Water Police.
Water Police. I always wanted to go on a police boat.
Well, you missed your chance in 1870s.
Well, there's still water units. We just don't live, you know, we just don't live near the water.
And we don't have formal water police.
No.
Regatta Day, April 17th, was do-or-die time for the Fenians and their rescuers. The Fenians themselves had to get crafty on the morning of the 17th. One man was assigned to dig potatoes, which didn't require supervision, so he's right out of there. I'm betting there was a stereotype involved. They said, probably. The Irishman's not going to leave the potatoes, you don't even need to watch him. He's attached. Another was painting a superintendent's house, giving him a window of opportunity to sneak away from the job site before anyone noticed one of the workers was missing. And the remaining four were able to smooth talk the guards into believing they were needed for a couple different work details outside the prison. They were all given the leeway to head to those jobs unescorted, and in short order, all six men arrived at the meeting point where Breslin provided them with the coats to cover their prison garb, pistols and things in case things got too hairy, and some rented horses and carts to carry them to Captain Anthony. So they getting out of the prison was the easy part.
Yes.
They all were trusted enough to just walk away, which is incredible to me.
I know. He's digging potatoes. Leave him alone.
Yeah. Send him to the potatoes. He'll be there. Make sure he doesn't eat any. Now, meanwhile, Desmond's private army, which, you know, remember he befriended a few guys, they severed the telegraph lines between Fremantle and Perth, delaying any calls for assistance once the guards noticed the missing men. Breslin and the convicts raced up the coast, covering the 20-mile gap to the pier as fast as those horses could move. Before we arrive at Rockingham, word from the National Investigative Training Academy.
If you are looking for a career change or to expand your knowledge in an already established one, look no further than the National Investigative Training Academy. The National Investigative Training Academy, or NITA, N-I-T-A, has well over 100 courses with 70 professional development ones alone. NITA is constantly adding to their course catalog, and courses are focused on private investigation and security fields. Whether you would like to become a private investigator or you need continuing education for your investigative or security career, the National Investigative Training Academy is for you. All courses offered are 100% online and do at your own pace. Once completed, you will receive a certificate in that course. Sign up today at investigativeacademy.com. Make sure when you sign up for your courses, you mention we sent you there. We encourage you to get the best investigative and security training possible today. When you sign up, mention our brand ambassador code, BA2367. That's BA2367, and you can find those courses at investigativeacademy.com. Look for links in our show notes as well.
Once the escapees were in sight, Captain Anthony was able to breathe a small sigh of relief, but he was also a little confused. The captain expected a seventh escapee to join them on the journey, but the Fenians took it upon themselves to leave one man behind. That man was James Keeley, who, 10 years prior, had offered to provide the names of his fellow Fenians in exchange for a lighter sentence when the British began cracking down on them. His offer was rejected, and he faced the same punishment as the rest, but he was never forgiven for this betrayal. For that reason, he was left out of the escape plan, but was formally released in 1878. So he got a couple extra years just for trying to snitch. I guess Irish folk don't like that. Unfortunately, the captain was not the only one to see the escapees riding to the pier. A local man who had previously been chatting with Captain Anthony saw the gang of horses and noticed the men's coats flapping in the wind, wearing prison attire underneath.
Well, fellas, they should have buttoned up their coats.
What kind of coats did Breslin get? The man ran to alert the authorities, but by this time, guards had noticed the missing prisoners and began the search with the help of local police and the British Army. Because naturally, there's, you know, some soldiers in town for the regatta.
Right.
As the crew aboard Captain Anthony's rowboat saw six men in prison attire carrying pistols headed towards them, they armed themselves with their oars and prepared to fight off these scoundrels until the captain shouted the order to pull these men aboard and row back to the Catalpa. So by this point in their voyage, many of the crew had figured out there was a hidden purpose for the journey, but any that didn't know just found out.
What?
We're taking those men back.
An awful thing. What are we doing?
Yeah, there's six maniacs with guns running at us, and they're prisoners.
All I have is an oar.
No, they're fine. Bring them on board. Let's get out of here. What? This is a whaling expedition. Breslin and the convicts made it on board, but now it was time for the hard part. They would have to row for hours to make it to the Catalpa in ideal weather conditions. But it was quickly apparent the conditions were just dreadful. Oof. This sounds like hell. Mm. A terrible storm struck and thrashed the boat back and forth.
And they're 10 miles from it, correct?
Correct. And the little rowboat did have a sail, but that thing snapped almost immediately. Yeah. So you're rowing by hand through these deep, murky waters. Captain Anthony didn't think the boat would make it through the night, but it managed to hold together despite the waves knocking it off course, greatly delaying their progress to the Catalpa. The storm lasted until the next morning, at which point the cold, hungry, and weather-beaten crew were able to resume manually rowing many miles to salvation. So they finally get to the boat, and they're just about scot-free when they just get whipped by the storm.
And they're, you know...
And their little sail broke.
Aw. That poor boat. But, you know, they're already...
Probably malnourished.
Yes, and they're overworked. Off course more, so they wasted a bunch of time and energy expended.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now they're starting basically from zero.
Right.
Or worse than zero.
Without a sail.
Without even a little sail to help. On the morning of the 18th in Fremantle, the water police, fantastic, had been searching at sea with no signs of the escapee's rowboat. They commandeered a large, fast steamship named the Georgette.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. And headed to... What a nice boat.
Nice name.
And headed to the Catalpa to see if the men aboard this humble whaling ship had seen anything fishy. Ba-dumped. When they arrived, they were greeted by First Mate Samuel P. Smith, because the captain was ashore. The police asked Smith if he had seen the escapees, and Smith gave a cheeky grin and said, "No." The obvious grin was enough to convince police he was a liar. I know. Smith.
Come on.
What are you doing? Sam.
I mean, he's got a name that is as common as it comes. And he can't hide a smile. Jeez.
You're supposed to be the everyman. You're blending in. You're just a whaling first mate.
Name's Smith.
They asked to come aboard and check for themselves, but since they were in international waters, asking was all they could do. Smith told them, not a chance. Or, by some tellings of the story, not by a damn sight.
That's what I'm going to start using. Can you do that? Not by a damn sight.
And the police were left with no option but to return to shore, refuel the Georgette, and come up with a new plan. As the Georgette made its way to and from the Catalpa, in the distance, Captain Anthony and the escapees laid flat in the rowboat, hoping they wouldn't be seen or would just be mistaken for debris from the storm. So they're doing their best impression of a log at sea as this big ship passes by. They managed to go unnoticed and continued rowing once the coast was clear. The rowboat was on the home stretch and the exhausted crew was reinvigorated by the sight of the Catalpa getting closer. However, rowing would still take time and they were just spotted. The suspicious water police spied the boat closing in on the Catalpa, and they were certain that that first mate with the smile had lied to them.
No.
I think that guy was fibbing. A police sailing ship, with several dozen officers aboard, began racing to the Catalpa to intercept the rowboat. The men rowed furiously, and the cops were closing in, but not quite fast enough. The captain, his rowing crew, and the Fenians were hoisted on board just as the police ship pulled up alongside, where they waited for a moment and headed back to shore defeated. After a brief celebration, the men aboard the Catalpa shared a meal and finally rested their weary bones, ready to start their journey to America the next day. The British, however, were not yet done. On the morning of April 19th, the Georgette was coming back, fueled up, and now outfitted with cannons.
Oh dear.
As well as a full crew of officers who weren't going to take no for an answer. She swung around the side of the Catalpa, trying to force her back into Australian waters where the police could board them and search the ship legally. So they're trying to corral this whole ship.
Yeah.
Like, come on, get in there. Get! As the ships attempted to outmaneuver each other.
You can't wave a ship into the water like you can wave a cow like into a corral.
Go on. Hey, not that way. As the ships tried to outmaneuver each other, the police demanded the prisoners be turned over, and eventually, the Georgette fired a 12-inch cannon across the bow of the Catalpa as a warning. For those of us in America, 12 inches is a foot. Mm-hmm. That's an international story.
I know.
Unfortunately for the British, Captain Anthony had an ace up his sleeve, the good old U.S. of A. Captain Anthony had his men hoist the American flag high and proud, and this let the British know that the Catalpa sailed under the authority of the United States, and firing upon them in international waters would be an act of war. Thinking better of creating an international incident, the Georgette ceased fire, waited nearby for a while, and then gave up, returning to Fremantle. So, after the Revolution and the War of 1812, they probably said, you know what?
So this isn't worth That's it.
That's enough. It's enough with these people already. With that, the Catalpa was free to return to New York, dodging any British ships on the way, just in case. They arrived to a raucous celebration on August 19th, 1876. In the end, the Fenians were free to live on in the U.S. The governor of Western Australia was actually glad those darn Irishmen were someone else's problem now. And the British didn't really take any of it personally. I think by then they didn't care because a lot of people had been pardoned anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, nobody got hurt. They took those six guys when we weren't going to let
we
go.
We tried, but eh.
Yeah. And that is the story of the Catalpa Rescue. Or pretty the good. Irish people heist.
Yes. Pretty good.
Oh, and Thomas Desmond, the guy who had his own little private army of Irish dudes mm-hmm. who cut the telegraph lines, he eventually became the sheriff of San Francisco.
Really?
Only for a year. I don't know if the terms were 1 year at that point, but from like 1880 to 81, he was a sheriff. So
interesting.
He's good with people.
Yeah.
We do appreciate you joining us for this ridiculous tale.
Hey, it was super interesting.
Yeah.
And it's still, you know, crime-based. Yeah. It's just different, which is good once in a while.
Yeah. Bogus imprisonment and an escape that was probably righteous in the end.
My favorite part of it is that I can picture the whole thing, especially when they're trying to maneuver the ship back into the water.
This big steamship.
It's a great mind picture.
Going back and forth. I'm going to cut them off.
With the water police.
Yeah. With the water police close behind.
I wonder what their hats look like.
Oh, they probably had great hats.
I know. I love a good hat.
I love a fantastic, a class A hat for the water police.
I love a good hat anyway.
It's got a little buoy on top so you find them if they go overboard.
Well, next time we'll probably bring you something along the lines of our usual episodes.
Something equally interesting, but a bit dreary.
Yeah, a bit morbid. Thank you for listening.
Please sign the crime scene log on your way out.
Stay safe.
And so long.